This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
The heat helps those plastic bags to produce biotoxins. These biotoxins infiltrate our food, and they are cancerogenous.
That's Florence Tumasang, a doctor with the Cameroon Baptist Convention's Health Services Agency, on the need to stop the use of plastic bags to carry food. Also, the head of Senegal's main opposition calls for protests if President Sall pursues a third term, and the home of the mayor of a Paris suburb was set on fire during unrest sparked by the police killing of a teenager there. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. As human trafficking expands worldwide, more than 27 million people are denied autonomy over their lives and actions. A U.S. 2023 Trafficking in Persons report released last month warns of increased online scams and forced labor and says young boys and men in particular face an increased risk of being trafficked. VOA's Paul Ndiho reports.
Fighting human trafficking in Africa remains a significant challenge due to various factors such as corruption, weak law enforcement, and limited resources. The U.S. State Department's 2023 Trafficking in Persons report says millions of people are exploited for commercial sex, adults and children alike, within their home countries and across borders. Yvonne Benson Idohosa from Nigeria was among those honored this year for her efforts to combat human trafficking. She uses her non-profit group Pathfinders Justice Initiative to study and fight sex trafficking and advocate for victims in Nigeria.
Essentially what we do is provide support, rehabilitation support for survivors of sex trafficking, but we're also focused on prevention as well for women who are at risk to becoming trafficked.
The Nigerian government has established the National Agency for Prohibition of Trafficking in Persons to combat human trafficking. Idohosa says despite these efforts, challenges persist.
The last reports from Nigeria indicate that there's about 1.6 million people that are actually being trafficked at any given time across the country. But I think that number is highly underreported because there are aspects of trafficking within Nigeria that a lot of people don't even consider, right? So things like domestic servitude or child brides.
Fighting human trafficking requires addressing problems such as poverty and lack of education, which is essential for long-term prevention.
Overall, globally, the issue is something that I think requires a lot more prioritization, particularly from the Nigerian government as well as international governments.
Though progress has been made, the fight against human trafficking in Nigeria continues. It requires collaboration and sustained efforts from all stakeholders to effectively combat this crime and ensure the protection and well-being of vulnerable individuals. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Officials in Cameroon say plastic bag pollution in the country has doubled in the past 4 years to some 600,000 tons, harming the environment as well as animal and human health. The Central African state in 2012 banned the production, sale, and use of non-biodegradable plastic bags, but still huge quantities are smuggled in from neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon, that efforts to crack down on the waste are ongoing.
Voici l'effet de bâton, voici l'effet de coquille, pour la braise, pour le mintumba.
A woman using a bull horn tells civilians at Mfundi Market in Yaoundé that plastic bags constitute a serious menace to the environment. She says diseases and floods will decrease when civilians return to the old practice of packaging and storing food in plantain, banana, and other plant leaves. Cameroon's ministries of trade and the environment say caravans were dispatched to markets in the Central African state as part of activities marking International Plastic Bag Free Day, celebrated annually on July 3. Florence Tumasang is a doctor with the Cameroon Baptist Convention's Health Services Agency. She says plant leaves are biodegradable and enriched with antioxidants, whereas plastic bags are dangerous to health and the environment.
I don't know how we are going to stop our people from tying hot food in plastic bags, because the heat helps those plastic bags to produce biotoxins. These biotoxins infiltrate our food and they are cancerogenous. This, we have to go back to using leaves, which are natural, to tie our hot food.
Many people in Cameroon use proper bags as well, but some argue that paper bags are not as good at conserving cooked food. In 2012, Cameroon banned the use of non-biodegradable plastic packaging on the grounds they clog waterways, spoil the landscape, and take 1,000 years to break down. When they do degrade, they break into particles that pollute the soil and water. After dropping for several years, non-biodegradable plastic bag pollution has doubled since 2019 to 600,000 tons per year, according to the government. Abel Foncha Gogomo is the highest government trade official in Cameroon's northwest region. He says it is not easy to stop what he calls the huge quantities of plastic bags illegally smuggled from Nigeria on a daily basis.
We actually have not been able to stop the plastics from entering from the neighboring countries. The porous nature of the region has been the problem we are facing.
Millions of additional bags are produced illegally each year in Cameroon. Civilians using the bags say the government did not start producing other types of biodegradable food packaging materials in partnership with private companies as it had promised. The government acknowledges the packaging materials it is producing do not meet national needs yet and is encouraging civilians to use leaves. International Plastic Bag Free Day is marked on July 3rd every year to increase awareness of the damaging effects that single-use plastic bags cause on the environment. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Reuters news agency says a naval fleet of China's People's Liberation Army arrived in Nigeria for a port call yesterday. The Chinese ambassador to Nigeria called the five-day visit a milestone in ties, while the Nigerian Navy says it's willing to work with Beijing to tackle maritime security threats and maintain stability in the Gulf of Guinea. Reuters notes that some speculate the region could serve as a potential base for China's military. China opened its first overseas naval base in Djibouti in Northeast Africa in 2017, part of an effort which some security analysts say they see as an effort to set up regional logistics facilities on the continent. The home of the mayor of a Paris suburb was the apparent target of rioters during a fifth straight night of unrest, sparked by the police killing of a teenager. The home of Vincent Jeanbrun, mayor of a southern suburb in Paris, was rammed by a burning car while his family was sleeping last night, and he was in the town hall monitoring the violence. Jeanbrun said his wife and one of their two children were injured as they fled the house. A local prosecutor has opened an investigation into attempted murder in the attack. Authorities said police arrested over 150 people nationwide in rioting overnight Monday, far fewer than the 719 arrested by early yesterday after a mass security deployment. Several schools, police stations, town halls, and stores have been targeted by fires or vandalism in recent days. A 24-year-old firefighter died last night while trying to douse burning cars in an underground car garage north of Paris. The 17-year-old of Algerian and Moroccan descent, whose death on Tuesday spawned the anger, was laid to rest on Saturday in a Muslim ceremony in Nanterre. The boy's grandmother has pleaded with rioters on Sunday to end the violence while speaking to BFM TV. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these stories and other stories from the continent, slide on over to voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. In Senegal, the leader of the main opposition party is calling for protests against President Macky Sall if he decides to seek a third term next year. The president is expected to announce his decision in just a few hours from now. The Constitution does not allow a president to seek a third term after serving two full terms. Main opposition leader Ousmane Sonko says it will be an affront to the Constitution if the president decides to run again. He's urging voters to protest against what he calls an illegal action against the aspirations of the people. Al-Malik Ndiaye is the national secretary in charge of communications of the opposition PASTEF Les Patriots. That's a political party led by presidential aspirant Ousmane Sonko. He tells VOA's Peter Clody that if President Sall seeks another term, it could plunge the country into chaos and instability.
We are really scared for two reasons. The first one is the President Macky Sall, who is willing or showing signs that he would like to run for a third term, which is illegal and immoral. And also the second thing is how to block President Ousmane Sonko to be candidate for the next presidential election in Senegal, which is scheduled to February 24th on 2024. So the two situations are not acceptable for us. And what President Ousmane Sonko was saying yesterday is that if he decides to declare his candidature for a third term, normally the Senegalese people should stand up and fight against this illegal third kind of candidacy. So, and for us, it's quite normal. We did it in the past with President Abdoulaye Wade. We cannot accept it also for President Macky Sall.
Calling on Senegalese to protest if the president decides to run for a third term, wouldn't he be putting the lives of his supporters in danger if the police decide to crack down on a protest?
I mean, police don't have to decide to shut down or to kill people when they are protesting. It's a common practice in all countries. When presidents would like to go against the rules, against the constitution, it's up to the people, who is the only one who has power to decide to fight against it, to stand up and fight against. That's what we see in all serious countries. Normally in democratic countries, in serious countries, any president don't have to go against rules, against the constitution. What the President Macky Sall should do is to organize transparent elections without participating or without trying to participate, and let the people to choose who will be the next president.
El-Malik, some people are saying if the main opposition leader has committed a crime and it has been found by a competent court that indeed he committed a crime and he has been convicted, then it is not the state interfering or preventing him from running. What do you say to those who are defending the government?
Seriously, do you think that the leader of the opposition committed a crime? The sentence was very clear. The sentence was very clear. Any crime. So they found another, I don't know where they found their sentence, which were not in the cases, just to block him, just to make him lose his civil rights. It's not acceptable. If President Ousmane Sonko committed a crime, we will not be here now to defend something like that. But we know all that the President Macky Sall and his parties are just trying to block him because they don't want him to become the next president. Because they know that he is the most famous opposition, and Senegalese people are really willing to elect him as the next president. So for them, electing President Ousmane Sonko is not a good thing for them, and they should use all their power to block him, to prevent him participating on the next election, and this is not acceptable. For sure, Senegalese people will not accept it.
A lot of supporters of President Macky Sall are saying Senegalese want him to continue the good work he is doing, so they should amend the law so he could seek a third term. What's your response to that?
The president himself stated several times that it will be his second and last term. he wrote it on his book as well.
That was El Malik Ndiaye, National Secretary in Charge of Communications of Senegal's main opposition party, speaking with my colleague Peter Cloti. Saul has argued that it would not be unconstitutional for him to run again, and that his decision to do so would be free and sovereign. His supporters argue that a constitutional revision in 2016 reset the counter to zero. Saul says another term would allow him to take a path that already has been marked out for the country to become a more developed economy by 2035. In the Netherlands, King Willem-Alexander has apologized for the Netherlands' history of slavery and the lasting effects it has caused. Charles de Ledesma has more from the Associated Press.
King Willem-Alexander of the Netherlands has apologized for the royal house's role in slavery and has asked for forgiveness at an event to commemorate the anniversary of the country abolishing slavery.
Als uw koning en als deel van de regering maak ik vandaag
in an emotional speech met by cheers and whoops, Willem Alexander first refers back to Prime Minister Mark Rutte's apology for slavery late last year, then says, "Today, as your king and as a member of the government, I make this apology myself, and I feel the weight of the words in my heart and my soul." The King's speech is part of a wider reckoning with colonial histories in the West that have been spurred in recent years by the Black Lives Matter movement. The King says he's commissioned a study into the exact role of the royal house of Orange-Nassau in slavery in the Netherlands. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
As you heard, King Willem Alexander of the Netherlands apologized for his country's role in slavery and asked for forgiveness. The Associated Press spoke with some of those at the speech. Dwelja Raffles is from the former Dutch colony Suriname.
Honestly, I feel good, but I am still looking forward to something more than just apologies, reparations, for example. The king said something about healing and repairing, but not necessarily about reparations, which are very important for our community to heal. And I'm not only talking about monetary reparations, but also institutionally and structurally. Yes, so that's mostly why I am okay, but I don't feel like we're done. We're definitely not there yet.
Kamuyugi Mohammed Ali lives in the Netherlands and was disappointed by the apology.
For me, this apology, it's a justification that the Dutch government has seek apology for their We will call it the crimes against humanity. Them
people accept it.
It's not everyone accept, because I don't accept that apology.
Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte last also apologized for the country's role in the slave trade and slavery last year. He stopped short of offering compensation to descendants of enslaved people. Instead, the government is establishing a $270 million fund for initiatives that tackle the legacy of slavery in the Netherlands and its former colonies and to improve education about the issue.
That was VOA's Peter Cloti. The African Union force in conflict-torn Somalia has finished the first phase of its troop reduction aimed at turning over security operations to the National Army and Police. The African Transitional Mission in Somalia, known as ATMIS, said on Friday that six of its bases were handed over to Somali security forces, drawing down hundreds of troops by the June 30th deadline. VOA Somali service reporter Harun Marouf says the AU force has been operating in Somalia since early 2007, and many Somalis felt all those years gave the government plenty of time to build its army and put it in charge of fighting Islamist militants across the country.
And that is one of the reasons that forced the Somali government and the African Union forces to reach an agreement with definitive timelines on troop drawdown. And given the latest drawdown of 2,000 troops by the African Union forces, it does not mean that all 2,000 forces are leaving Somalia. Some of these troops will be continuing to work in the country as mobile forces alongside Somali forces based on the agreement reached by the two sides in April 2021. So the Somali government has been training thousands of troops in Eritrea, in Ethiopia, and in Uganda in the past few months, and the Somali government believes that it has enough troops to take over responsibility from the African Union forces so that they can not only fight against Al-Shabaab, but they can also give protection to the civilians. That doesn't always happen because Somali troops are still inexperienced, vulnerable. They don't have enough weapons. There is an arms embargo in Somalia. They face a lot of challenges, but they wanted to face this challenge as early as possible.
What about the civilians there? How do they feel about it with the troop drawdown?
There are mixed reactions to this troop drawdown. There are those who believe that this decision was taken in light of the continued presence of African Union forces and lack of significant progress towards stabilizing the country and lack of significant progress in terms of weakening the power of Al-Shabaab in the countryside. But there are also those who believe that really the time that African Union forces were to leave Somalia is past due. They believe Somali government and Somali leaders have to face the reality and they have to take responsibility for their own country. They believe the only people who can stabilize Somalia are Somalis.
Give us a little background on these Al-Shabaab militants. What are they fighting for in Somalia?
Al-Shabaab is a militant organization that has merged with Al-Qaeda in 2012. So they believe in global jihad. They believe that Somalia is one of the front lines in fighting against crusaders, infidels, and they also wanted to restore or establish an Islamic government based on their own interpretation. But also Al-Shabaab has local interests. They have local relevance. They directly communicate with local people, telling them that they are fighting for the, as they call, for driving crusader countries out of Somalia. They are referring to Uganda, Ethiopia, Burundi, Djibouti, and Kenya. They also believe that the Somali government is not reflecting the interests of the Somali people. When they say that, they are referring to the long civil strife in Somalia since 1991. There has not been a strong central functioning government in Somalia. They believe they are the alternative and they believe they can provide an Islamic government that can give services, security, and other social services to the public.
It sounds like you're saying that they talk directly to the people, they communicate with them, they say they're going to offer services. So do they have support among some communities there?
The support to Al-Shabaab has been decreasing over the years. We know Al-Shabaab gained most support in 2007-2008 when the Ethiopian forces entered Somalia to support the Somali government. So at that time, a lot of Somalis supported, not because they wanted to be part of Al-Shabaab, but they wanted to drive Ethiopia out of Somalia. And Ethiopia and Somalia had historical animosity for a long time. So that's what drove many people in the hands of Al-Shabaab at the time.
That is VOA Somalia service reporter Haroon Maarouf. He was speaking with me earlier today here in Washington. The AU force drawdown began over the weekend. And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yarborough, and our engineer, Kilia Williams, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.